Hello, this is Real History with Melissa, and it is the 18th day of June, 2026. And I'm happy today to be talking with Chris Miner, who got in touch with me a while back and said he'd been listening to Alan Watt for a while. And we had a nice conversation and some back and forth in email. And we're just going to dive in on this conversation and see where it takes us.
How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How's your month been so far since we last talked?
Busy. Yeah, busy, but good. I've been in, you know how you get in a place where you kind of evaluate where your life is and what isn't working and what works. And I've been in one of those for a while now, but some positive changes are coming about as a
Good.
result. Yeah.
How is the book? The book coming.
The book is it's arrived. And if you haven't seen it, I've got pictures of it up on the website, but I'm going to show you what it looks like.
Yeah, no, it looks great.
Yeah,
It
and the
looks great.
back. Yeah, it's a beauty, and it's selling. So I should say,
Oh.
as panic buying, you should hurry up
I know I'm gonna get
because.
one. I'm gonna get one soon. I'm gonna get one soon. I was waiting to pay rent this month out here.
Well, let's start first of all, because I know a bit about your background, and you told me when you started listening to Alan. What are you drinking, by the way? Yerba mate. Okay, tea. Got it.
Everyone seems to like this stuff for some reason, which makes me think I should stop drinking
Well, it's supposed to be good for you, I hear.
That's what they say. So
Yeah.
we'll see. It's a
All
lot more
right.
sugar. I think more sugar than I'm used to, though, but at least it's natural, they say.
Yeah, I guess that's why people brew it and steep it themselves. So it
Yeah,
yeah.
that's what I started having Maggie do. Now she's brewing it for me, so I don't get as much sugar in it just because I know it's way more than I'm used to.
See, girlfriends and fiancés and wives, they're good for something. Brewing tea. I gotta tell you before we hear, Alan, he liked coffee and tea, but he really liked tea. And I wasn't had never been a big, huge tea drinker, and then I had to learn how to make tea. How did he like his tea? And he made the best cup of tea I've ever had, hands down.
And
But
did
I
it be warm tea or was he did he like more like
warm
iced
tea.
tea?
He
Warm tea.
wasn't. Yeah, iced tea is for us Texans and the Yanks. But he made a great cup of tea, and I would say to him sometimes because he might every once in a while complain about my tea. And I said, "Well, why don't you start making the tea?" No, I said, "But your tea is so much better than my." He said, "You put the bag in, you steep it for 3 minutes, you add a little sugar and milk, and that's it." I said, "I know that's it, but when you do it, it's like magic. It's a cup of magic. When I do it, it's just like Still, he wouldn't do it.
No, I'm the same way. I can't. I
That's
don't like,
Maggie's job.
the kitchen. I can't. I'll do dishes once in a while, but
That's it.
yeah, I don't like making food. I don't like cooking.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I
You're
clean. I like cleaning.
good. All right.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I do part, she does part. So it works.
Okay. That's good. Well, tell us, as in the audience, where you're from, a little of your background, because at the moment you are in LA. Los
Yes.
Angeles, and you have been there for a while, but tell us
Yeah.
first how you got there and when Alan Watt came into your listening.
So I came out here, I think it's a little over 10 years ago now. It was after I had played in a band for, geez, around 10 years. Towards the end of college, I started playing music, and then that eventually led me into working in film, and then I moved out here. And around 2018 is when someone told me there was an Alan Watt who was different from the Alan Watts that was constantly bombarding my feed. And I had listened to the Alan Watts guy before, and some of the stuff I was okay, but I wasn't that interested in it. But then when I heard Alan, you're Alan, I was like, oh, I like Alan Watt. So then I was really disappointed because I was listening, but other things were happening. But 2020 came around, and then obviously we lose Alan, and I was like, oh, Because like I wish I would have had a chance to even talk to him and reach out to him when he was still here, just because I'd gotten that chance with so many other people who were talking out during what was going on in 2020. And that was a huge huge loss for us. And I my condolences obviously with that. But he was he's still some that me and my buddies, when we do shows, when we talk, we always reference him.
Well, to me, he's,
His best. He was the best.
So let's back up to college. What did you study?
So I went to Villanova for a year and a half and was, I think, just liberal arts while I was there. And I wound up transferring out. I didn't like it. And from there, I bounced around and wound up finishing at Monmouth University. And just to finish, business management and a bachelor's in business management was what I finished with. And I was just getting so tired of being at school. That's why I that was the fastest way to get out at that point, because I didn't want to waste all the money and the time I had already spent.
So, and then you formed a band in college, and you were good. I've heard some of the songs, so.
We did okay. It was a odd time for pop punk type of that style of music, because it was kind of going out at that time, and now all of a sudden it's like back in the mainstream again, but it was dying out, so it was less popular. But we still played Warped Tour, we played Bamboozle, we got signed by a small indie label at the very end, and that's when I left, because I knew that it was going to be a nightmare and I didn't want to deal with it.
Just the whole being, being on a label and being managed and all that.
I had heard stories about the label and heard that it probably wasn't going to be anything beneficial to us. And we'd already been through so much of a nightmare with our past managers, our past, I guess we would do showcases for other labels, and the negotiations we were trying to go through with other independent, smaller labels. And it was just very shady people. Always. It was always just a process. And I was tired. And of course, then I went to film thinking it would be better. I don't know why I thought it would be any better. It wasn't. It was worse.
He's a glutton for punishment.
Yeah.
So the you talk about shady people in the music business. I mean, what are some examples? What was the feeling that you had? Obviously, you liked making music, playing it.
Yeah. Well, I can't even tell you what just happened when, because right now, I self-distribute the songs from even my band through TuneCore and DistroKid. They're like you upload the music yourself and it sends it out to Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever else people listen to their music nowadays. And my TuneCore distributor said that they're no longer doing licensing syncs for like TV movies. Not that that happens often, but sometimes they'll give you an offer. So they sent me to a new company, and when I was trying to just like sync my songs with their new catalog, I saw that one of my old managers, who had actually stolen tens of thousands of dollars from us over a course of, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, he was still had his name listed under like one of the songs that did best for us online. Like, so he was still somehow must have been collecting partial royalties on streams. And I was like, what is going on here? Really? Like, we're not making any, we don't make money. Like,
Well, he is.
that's he. I'm saying, if he does that to like 30, 40, 50, 100 people, that's a nice little con game that he's playing there. It was just, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he's been doing this the whole
Well,
time.
did you do anything about it, or is there anything?
I had to reach out to the company and just tell him he shouldn't be on the publishing, he shouldn't be on the copyright. There's nothing, he had no involvement with it, and they took him off. I don't know how much he would have actually made off it, because like at most every quarter, maybe we'll make a couple hundred bucks off of royalties. So it's not like, it's not much. So
But you're
what?
right. If he's got a string of them, I mean, it's a little something.
But that type of thing was continual with like people stealing money or telling you something was going to happen. Or also, they would reach out to me because I was the singer, and they would try to get me to break up with the band, like leave the other guys in the band and just write with them in the studio. These older men who were either still trying to be in a band themselves and were at managers now, or just wanted to deal with one artist instead of a whole group of artists. And it was constantly just causing drama, fights for no reason, because I would never do that. But when people are seeing and hearing things from someone whispering in their ear that I'm going to do that when I've never said I was going to do that, it was problematic constantly.
Yeah. So how did this guy get away with, I mean, how did he manage to steal all this money and
One was for a recording session that we were doing, I think in New York, that ultimately we didn't do. We did a couple songs. We practiced a few songs there. We didn't really like the studio and we left, but he kept the money. And then after that, he just kind of disappeared. And at that point, there was no one really going to go after him for the amount it was, because it was like $10,000, maybe
Oh, it's a lot for
$12,000.
you.
Not for us, but not for the police or anyone like that. And he apparently had already a bunch of lawsuits against him from, I think, like ex-wives and stuff like that, trying to collect child support. So he was just,
So how does it work in the music? Like, okay, so you're with, I'm assuming these are college classmates of yours, and you say,
Well,
let's make a band.
the weird thing with my band was I met two of them initially on this old website called joinmyband.uk. It was almost like a dating website, but for bands. Like, it was if you're looking to play in a band, which it was really random. And I was like trying to be a backup singer, keyboardist in a pop punk band, something like that. And my friend Mike reached out to me with another guitarist and a drummer that he was playing with at the time. And we met up, and then they were like, "Oh, we need a singer. So you're gonna sing." I didn't want to sing, so that was rough. But I eventually did, and then me and Mike eventually then met other people as we were playing with the two people that he had brought on, and those two people eventually shuffled out, and we had a, I think, 6 or 7 piece band by the end of it. Yeah. So I mean, once we recorded the first 3 or 4 songs that we did and they went out, people were asking to, when we needed people, they would ask to try to join. So then we'd try them out for a day. And if we liked them, we got lucky. So
That's
it's usually
neat.
not that easy, I don't think. As
No.
far as I know, from people I know who have made it and have had a decent career, who are still playing and are, you'll see on TV, they were jumping around bands nonstop, almost like it was like they were trying to just get a hit single with whoever they could be put with. And I know that would happen a lot too, where management companies would come in with some of these kids and they'd say, "Here, meet this John, meet Mike, get together, form a new band that's kind of like your old band, but a little different, and sing this song." And then they'd blow up and have a single on the radio. Yeah.
And usually it's one and done
Yeah.
for
Exactly. I don't want to mention names because they're nice. The kids are nice enough who that happened to. It just, I don't know how people do that to their friends when they've been playing with them for years and just leave them. And it seems like that process constantly was going on.
Well, that actually, I think that happens all the time. I think it
Yeah.
has since the history of pop music, because there's always somebody who gets in the ear and says, "Well, you really are good. You've got it. You got the star quality." But
Yeah,
they don't.
it's also less money for the labels to pay. And I mean, we've seen this now with, I think, pretty much every, like you're saying, every band that is put in front of us. I mean, we saw the boy band thing on TV recently. I think they did like the whole how they were all put together and then abused, unfortunately, by a lot of their said that same manager, I think, worked with like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. But the same thing happens in pop punk, where a lot of these things aren't organic. And bands are just placed together because they're in the right place at the right time. Certain people's sons or daughters, and they get linked in.
So you got picked up by the indie record label, but that was it for you. You just said, I don't.
Yeah, when that happened, I said, guys, I want to start kind of writing a little bit of maybe my own stuff and maybe writing stuff for films, even like more music. I wasn't even thinking about acting much yet, but I had gotten offered an acting thing. I didn't think it would continue. And that would require me not to be around as much. So I definitely wouldn't be able to tour. And right away, when they sign you, they want you to go on a tour because they're going to make money off you. And then they're probably going to drop you after, and you're not going to make any money, especially if they're small and they're already like about to go bankrupt, which this one was. And that's what happened with them when after I left, the rest of the guys signed. They used a different name. They played the old songs. I was like, go ahead. But when they got back, they didn't even make enough money, I don't think, to cover gas. So it was like,
Brutal.
yeah. It's like, what was it even worth it at that point? So, and then that's kind of where I left and then moved to Virginia Beach when I was filming a horror movie at the time, which was awful. I don't recommend anyone ever watch it. And,
Okay. Well, we don't have to tell him about it, but you had been offered an acting job in a horror movie. Was
yeah.
that okay? All right.
And that was based off, oddly, the if you look on my YouTube page, the song The Watchful, there's like a 6-minute music video that I did for it with one of my friends, who was a cinematographer at the time. And we did it in like a day and a half. Because of that, and because my band had worked with this DP who was doing the horror film, he kind of just offered me the part. So it was just an odd sort of coincidence that I probably wouldn't have taken. I don't know if I would have taken the part today, honestly. Knowing how the treatment wasn't set and how none of us were paid and we were supposed to be paid and yeah.
All right, so that's Virginia Beach and the horror movie. And then what happened?
So then I move out here. I right when I get out here, I book another independent film that I do for like 2 years, and then I also start editing that film because the editor quits, and I wind up dating a girl whose pr mother is the producer, so she takes a chance and lets me start editing it, and it actually works out to where I did a good job. We get a distributor in place, and then I think the old producer who had left sues. So then that's like an old relationship now, and I don't talk to them anymore. And I just hear now that I think they might have sold that film again to a new distributor. So it might come out on like a streaming platform that was more of like a Christian type of
Okay, but this was
movie.
years ago.
Yeah.
So, oh, that's
Isn't
fascinating.
that strange that that's they would still even release it, but apparently this happens all the time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
So you had never edited before, and you
just
just.
like my reel and stuff like that, but it was something that I took too quick, and then that's what I started doing more about here because I realized I would have to start making my own stuff if I ever wanted to be comfortable in what I was making, at least too, because a lot of the times the projects I was getting to even look at from via my manager, I wouldn't even be comfortable playing half the roles. Just a lot of horrible scripts or unnecessarily, what's the word, gratuitous, I guess. Yeah. It's just for no reason, things that they would want me to do for no reason that I would never do.
Okay,
But a lot of people probably would.
yes, so a kind of a conscience thing. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah, so.
And so I was like, if I'm gonna make something, I'm gonna do it myself. That's probably gonna be how it happens. And then I started working on as a freelance, basically videographer and editor.
Okay. And you've
And
done
that's
you've done some interesting things there that you.
yeah. Since that film, I did a short film that won an award at some Beverly Hills Film Festival, I think in 2019. That was for a friend who was having a who his editor quit. A lot of editors wind up quitting films for some reason, and then you have these directors who are, especially independent ones, who are like, "Oh, I need help fast." And for some reason, I'm good in those types of situations. I'd rather actually probably have the pressure than start from the beginning of something because I put things off. I like doing things last minute.
All right. I'm this is like a little pet peeve of mine, and I've actually never had a conversation with an editor about this or really about anything else, but this is it's a viewer pet peeve. And I'm curious if I think that I already know the answer. I think that the problem is not the editor. I think it's probably about budget and not having enough footage to work with. But I'm really hate edits where they break away quickly and they come back, and the character's face position or eyes or whatever are in a position that they couldn't do in real life.
Like a, so not a continuity problem, but just a.
Well, in a way, it might be continuity. It would be, for instance, if the two people are looking at each other like that in profile, and then they do an edit for whatever reason, and it's like that, but when you come back, they're like, it's just they're completely in a different mood in a different way, and it's like, did they not have enough footage?
That seems like continuity, like a little bit of continuity too, and it could be where they just didn't get the footage, and then the editor's kind of stuck. Which a lot of that on that first film I edit happened to where we had a like we would have a scene that was coming after a scene where I was just fighting, my character was fighting with someone, and for some reason we didn't, or the director and writer didn't think that we needed a transitional scene in between. So the next scene was then me walking up to the door the next day as if nothing happened. And even I can't believe I didn't even think about it when I was on. So afterwards, I was like, this isn't going to work. We're going to have to. So then we wound up like just moving a lot of stuff around. And I luckily they let me do it because it wouldn't have worked. It would have just made no sense. But I think a lot of this type of stuff happens all the time,
I
especially
think
on lower
so.
budget
Well,
films.
but what surprises me is when it happens on bigger budget television or bigger budget film, and it does, and I'll be like, oh, what's.
One thing I found is editors are very lazy, but that type of stuff I think is more so your DP, your cinematographer, just not getting the shots that they need because the shot should be there or the writing is just kind of off maybe and there's nothing you could do at that point.
I guess so. I mean, one time, a long time ago, I was talking to a writer director, and he told me that that so much of what we think is the creative problem has to do with budget, and it has to do it's certain things like because they chose this location, they now have to do a whole I can't remember what they call it. Is it block shooting, where they shoot out of sequence?
I mean, we shoot out of sequence a lot. That's most sets do that, but blocking is kind of just like a like when you're
Not where you're going to stand. I think they call it's like a chunk of shooting, so that that chunk is not it's not how it unfolds on the script. In other words, it's much more economical if you do everything that you're going to do on that set, on that location, on that, no matter what. Or you'll have somebody come back. You've got an actor who's got to grow a beard for another project that he's on. And then all of a sudden you're like, you're either going to have to shave that or we have to add a month of production on here. So it's little things like that that
Seeing that in that
not always the
first,
editor is what I'm
oh yeah, no,
saying.
that's definitely the that's the per like the whole production team, and not the editor. Usually he's the last person to blame, because what's he what he can't really, now he might be able to with AI, I don't, maybe put hair or something on someone's face. But that happened on the first, that first film I was in. It was called The Possession Experiment. I don't care if people watch it. It was just, realize it was very bad. And they wanted to do an added scene or a reshoot of a scene. So I'd gone back, and my hair was much shorter than it was when I had filmed this, like the other scenes. And you could tell it like cuts, and all of a sudden it's like I got a haircut, and then it goes back. And I'm like, why did they leave that? Because now, after editing for so long, I would never leave it in. I would just be like, it's not worth it. It's so distracting. But I think after a while, some of these editors especially get frustrated, and they don't care
Oh,
enough, especially if it's not their project.
that's very funny. All right, so there's going to Hollywood, the conscience and going off on your own, and that's what you're still doing. You're still.
A lot of I got lucky, because I started doing, when I started doing the freelance videography and editing, my brother had a lot of work that needed to be done back in New Jersey, and he was doing very well as a dentist, but also on Instagram for his practice. So it was able to provide me work through all the lockdowns and everything that was going on when everyone wasn't able to work out here.
Oh, that's great.
So that was good, and that helped
So it was
keep
just kind
me.
of Instagram advertising of his practice.
Basically, we were doing like kind of what you see. I mean, it's actually good timing that we're talking about all this, because those two horror films that everyone's talking about right now, The Back Rooms and Obsession, that are YouTube, that were YouTubers originally, the directors. We were doing like comedic shorts, kind of like that, but for dentistry on his dental page. And for some reason, it was like a niche. Like no one was really, dentists weren't really doing that. And it worked, and it helped his practice grow. He had something like over 100,000 followers that he still has, I think, on Instagram. So it was actually like filming little short films, little short skits, which was fun. It was better than did. But and then we would do the occasional ad in between, and that's where we'd make the majority of the money. And then he started just being able to pay me himself for whatever I was doing.
Oh, that's neat. Is he still doing anything like that on Instagram
He's still doing stuff. I'm supposed to go back out and film with him soon. It just got to the point where he needed more basic kind of informational content, and I'm not out there, and
or?
he can't afford to keep having me go back out all the time. So it's kind of just now when it's more of like a specialty project.
Okay, and how did you meet Maggie?
We met right before the lockdowns, actually a few months before, in 2019, and it was because she had liked the photo that I had of a I had taken on a mountaintop in Los Angeles somewhere, and I messaged her and said, "Do I know you from somewhere?" Acting like I might have known her, even though I knew I didn't. And then I asked her out to dinner for or to get a drink, and then we went out, and then we've been together ever since.
That's great. That's great. And what does Maggie do?
She's in works in film as well, so works with on production. Now she's been doing a little production with me too, because she's been, I mean, we're all kind of seeing how it's the production side of things is dead if you're trying to still work with the studios here. I think they're trying to make people realize they have to start making their own content. I think that's what this whole push is with these horror films. And the Curry Barker or Barker, yeah, Curry Barker guy. I don't remember the other guy's name, but I think that's what that's all about. Just trying to light a fire underneath the film industry in some way with the youth.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's going to work.
Well, I read somewhere or saw something about the big push for AI now in filmmaking. And one thing I heard was that you are going to be able to green screen an entire movie or series, which means that you're going to have actors that can show up anywhere at a studio. They're not going to be on location and they won't be on set and they won't be on in costume because AI can now do that for you. So they just show up and read their lines and then AI drops a costume on them and does a costume change and does all this. And I just find that so, I'm thinking to myself, well, it would seem to me that half of what happens for an actor is the interaction that they're having with another actor, A. Then part of the inspiration for them doing their job is, let's say you're an actor and you're doing a period piece, and so you're wearing your costume and you've got okay, it's a facade town, it's a Western facade, but still it gets you in the mood and you think you're in a Western town and you've got your six shooters on your hips and stuff. Well, now all that could be done with AI, which blows me away, but
And it's not going to work out well, I'll tell you that. It'll work out, but it'll work out in a way where people like who watch the stuff, I think, are going to be either highly disappointed, or the new generation might of like younger kids who start watching it might just accept it as that's normal.
that's what I'm thinking. Because to me, it's if I hear an AI voice and people will send me a video and they go, I know, it's AI, but just listen to the what he's saying. The message is so important. And I'm like, I can't. If you can't find a human being who is motivated enough by the words to actually sit down in front of a microphone and record it, why should I be bothered to listen to it if it's that amazing of a message?
No, I totally agree. It's really disappointing the way everyone thinks. And again, I think that's part of the whole thing going on now with these guys. It's anyone could make their own movie, especially with AI, because that's being thrown in there. And it's going to lead to just even, oh God, did I just go blurry
You
for
went
some reason?
blurry. Yeah, it's a horror movie.
It's a horror movie.
It's the
What the
possession
heck?
experiment. It's
Oh,
like...
that's because someone's. I keep getting these random spam calls that won't stop. That's why that's doing that. Hold on. Let me. I don't know why that keeps happening. It's like nonstop. Just
Spam.
call it. Yeah, that from numbers I don't know, and it keeps leaving a message. Someone's trying to sign into your account. Won't tell me what account. Press one if it's you. Press two. I don't know how to stop it.
Well, what I've known, I mean, spam and crime is really, and all kinds of crime and scams is really on the
And
uptick.
I think a lot of it's the AI. Speaking of the AI, I think it's all just it's making it easier. I mean, I don't use much AI even at all, so I don't know why the heck my phone is vulnerable, but
Well, I have a feeling, and I have a feeling I'm right, but my feeling is that we have a lot more AI in all of our technology than we are aware of. And I'm going back to and the Alan Watt, working mode of thinking, as he said, by the time they introduce something to the public, what, cell phone, microwave, whatever it is, this is ancient, ancient technology. And I
absolutely.
believe that,
It
that's just.
certainly seems that way. I mean, and I don't know if, I mean, people have been talking about the idea too that they'll say something or even just think something, and all of a sudden they'll be getting ads for the thing that they thought of.
Yes.
I've had this happen to me where it
Yeah.
was something really random that I know, I'm like, I don't even know how this would have algorithmically mapped my thoughts to somehow predict that I would be thinking about this, because I've never mentioned something like a tent or something so random that I don't ever talk to anyone about. And then I'd see ads for it and I never mentioned it to anyone. And I'm just like, how is it doing that?
Well,
And I'm
you are
assuming.
not the first person who has told me that. Even a couple of years ago, someone who I know who is very, well, not conspiracy minded, at all. And I mean, and I don't like that word conspiracy, but they aren't thinking of the most complicated explanation for things, I'll put it that way. And he said to me, "I swear that my computer has read my mind a few times."
And I'm pretty sure there's ways that DARPA can do all of that at this point through
Yeah.
optogenetics and whatnot. I'm pretty sure they have a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think it's
I
kind of like a reading brainwave sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, now
Yeah.
I'm definitely in the Allen camp on this. I'll hear people say, "Oh no, they haven't mapped the human genome yet. Oh, they haven't, you know, they just tell us that. Oh, they haven't, you know." It's like, no. I see, I have this interesting theory. I don't know if I should talk about it yet.
Yeah, I'm sure you know. I would love to hear because I get into the craziest stuff with people, so I don't care what it is. If it's
Well,
interesting, and it's new, I guess.
I mean, this is just this is something that I haven't had enough time to explore this and to really get into the ins and outs of it, this particular angle of my theory. But see, Alan made several references to Crick and Watson and DNA, you know, just kind of offhand things about how, you know, supposedly. In other words, fitting into his theory that they've known about this for a long time.
Yeah, that
And
they weren't the originators. Yeah, they
no.
stole it.
Well, I
They
mean, first of
stole
all, well,
it.
there's there, you know, the history of it that we are told, the way that it unfolds, is there was a woman who was
Yeah.
working in X-ray crystallography by the name of Rosalind Franklin. And she was messing about with something and she saw that X. And so she's like, "Oh, well, then DNA is helical. It's, you know, there's is it two strands? Is it, how many strands is it? You know what? But it gives her a clue now." And she's got that famous what is it, photo 51? I think it's, yeah, photo, which is interesting to me because you
I
got
know
area
exactly who it is.
51, yeah, area 51 and photo 51. All right, so she's got this photo that then Crick and Watson stumble on. And this takes them down there. Now they get a Nobel Prize, and posthumously they back up and say, "Well, yes, Rosalind's work gave us this clue and everything." But just think about the X as it is in the occult. How we see the X marks a spot that, but you know, X is so
It's
important.
everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And, you know, Alan talks about that in the Cutting Through books, and the X is the trans, it's the cross, it's the, you know, so that's your X. And I just think that this is all mythology for our time. We have this amazing story and it unfolds and they're just messing about with it. But it, you know, Alan's idea of the three levels of science, and he would always say, you know, there's the original search and there's research. And I think so much of what we see now, I think a lot of, you know, look at how compartmentalized they have all scientists.
Well,
It's
this
so
is,
compartmentalized.
it reminds me of like the Marie Curie story,
Yes. Yeah.
which seems to be a similar case,
Yeah.
especially when you think Marie Curie. I know this is like with Crow 777. I heard this. He said, say Marie Curie three times fast. It's like Mercury.
Yes, yes,
Mercury
yeah,
the
yeah,
messenger. Who,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's all a mythological story. And we know that they had Mercury, or I mean, not Mercury. She discovered radium,
Yes.
right? I think it was radium, or was it the element before radium?
I'm not sure.
Now,
That's okay.
it was
Nobody,
one of
yeah.
the
There's not a
radioactive,
quiz after
yeah,
the
it was,
recording,
and I
so.
should know this because I've been doing a like an elemental series with Emily Moyer,
Oh, I
and
now I've watched several of you, but I haven't seen any that you've done with
yeah,
Emily,
hers are
so.
all on her Patreon, so it's like all behind a
Okay.
paywall. I so
Okay.
I haven't even been watching them lately,
Okay.
but I should. We've done so many elements now, and when we look into them, they all map onto old mythological tales. And a lot of the ways, then the stories that they give us that are more modern as to how they were discovered, they seem like nonsense. They all seem nonsensical. They don't make any sort of it's, and it's almost like they're reverse engineering a lot of things. Like they already know what they want to find.
Well, there is something, I mean, again, I'm working off of Alan's work in my thinking. And so I believed, I trust him. If he said it, I'm like, yep, that's a fact. And I can pick up a book of his and see, all right, yeah, he did his homework there too. But he talked about the three levels of science. And, so the first is the research, university level, and so forth. But now that lowest level is kind of blended in with the middle tier, because so much of what ends up being used in the military industrial complex is coming from the first tier. So you've got first tier researchers and so forth, but then you get clearance. You're a university, and the universities are really critical component, and their whole curriculum then therefore for people coming up there is funded usually by some component of the government or military industrial complex. But then you've got the level above that, which would be total high secret, high clearance. But I think the very top part of that is not even known to those. Because everything is clearance. It's like need to know, and it's heavily compartmentalized. So
So we would
working.
have, so who are, we would have no idea that who
No.
any of those people are at
Yeah.
that level of clearance. It would be
And
like a,
absolutely.
that's like
You,
modern day mythology at this point. Or
it, it is.
it's becoming that at least.
It is. And there are so many. I mean, there are a lot of different people that I've listened to. One of the peers or colleagues of James Giordano is a woman who's got. I forgot what branch of the military, but her name is Diane DeYoulis. And she's doing, interesting work that she's doing, which to me, I'm learning something from it. But again, this is whatever Diane DeYoulis is talking to people on YouTube about it. Believe you me, they're
Yeah,
way, way past that.
exactly. And it's like, what can you do with that? It gets so difficult to even know what's going on at that point. And I don't understand. I mean, I get it that people at like Giordano's level, they have a certain mindset. They have a certain belief system that I think allows them to be able to maintain that secrecy without a conflict in conscience.
Well, I definitely think, if you again, if you're compartmentalized, if you come up, and I forgot Diane DeYoulis' background right now, but and there's another woman who's working in the same group that Giordano and DeYoulis are working in, and I looked at her bio a few months ago. Really, she's just like a kindly auntie, seriously, and I've heard her talk. I can't recall her name right now, or I would tell us, but she comes from a military background. And you've got, her father in the military, her brothers in the military, her grandfather on both sides of the family are in the military. And this is, it's God and country, king and country. That's that this is it's a compartment that they come up. So, but anyway, I was listening to a talk of Alan's. I think it's something that I put up on a Redux in the last few weeks, but I might not have because they blend together in my head. Oh, I did put it up. Yeah. It
Was it
was
the newest one?
a talk that he did. By the time this goes up, it will be, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it was the first part of a series called The System that he did with Visigoth, Keith Hansen.
I was just listening to that before I think I came on, and I don't know how far I got into it,
Well,
but.
he's at a certain point, he's talking about underground bases. And yeah, and going underground and the importance that the underground and tunnel systems and so forth. And okay, so I'll just finish this thought here. Alan said to Visigoth, "Well, I think that they go, underground. People always come through." What he's really talking about is the troglodyte idea. That idea, but th so they if there is an underground stream,
I was
it
always wondering if he had that sort of, because I know he was always so careful when it came to that sort of stuff, to not.
Well, I'm going to be careful too. I am going to be careful, but
Well,
what he.
I always thought he was too careful because I always wanted to know what it
Yeah. Well, you got to meet one in a dark alley and then you'll know
Right?
yourself.
Right?
But no, he said to Visigoth, they come through and they carry knowledge with them. And what he said, oh, I wish I had it up, but what he said was they come through with the knowledge of these high technologies, high civilizations, high sciences. But the next thing he said really made me stop and think. So they come through with all this knowledge, and he said, and they can even start it up again in its primitive form. So, of course, of course, the high scientists of the occult are not going to just come into, they're not going to come down from the mountain with the pagan peasants and go, well, here you go. Here's some AI and microwave and drones and no, we all have to see them unfold it like a play over time.
And that's what they seem to do. It's like, and we, it things are, the script is starting to become more obvious to people, I think, now as it starts matching even like biblical revelation. Even like people are like, oh, well, people who aren't hardcore Christians at least are like, oh, this is seems like it's scripted. Like they're doing it on purpose.
Well, that Alan would always say, revelation, prophecy, or business plan.
Yeah, seems like business plan.
It's
That's what it seems like.
it's
And now we have there's even the Trump's daughter thing with the they were just had her in the news for buying a
Sazan Island.
an under, and that's a whole underground military base that they bought, I'm pretty sure. So it's they're all buying these things, like they're all getting ready to go down and wait and then reemerge with whoever gives them that more advanced technology, I guess.
And what's interesting, when you look at it, because again, it's really hard for me to buy the Orange Man or any of his progeny as being part of the elect, right? But is he not the perfect actor for the
Oh, he
time that we are in?
perfect 100%. I mean, and it's once you start then looking at also film, it does. There are certain films even that seem to have suggested that this is the type, at least, that they were going to try to cast, Back to the Future with Biff. And that's in the alternate timeline, who has the t tower that like Trump Tower almost that he's when he gets in charge of the world through the what does he have the sports book, I guess, that he uses to become rich. And then there's the oh, what's the other? Oh, the Super Mario Brothers film where the villain
I didn't
comes to
see
this
those.
timeline when the villain looks just like Trump, comes to this timeline and destroys the World Trade Centers. So it's like there's a bunch of stuff like that where it seems like that's who the archetype is.
I mean, if you see what's happening, what's unfolding is so cartoonish. It's gone past kayfabe and wrestling and
Well,
all of that. It's
I'm
just,
mentioning Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, the movie, which is an awful movie. And so that's how much of a joke it seems like it's all become. That's why I don't get it. I don't understand that people are still invested.
It really is. It's mystifying to me because just look at it. I mean, look at when he has when he's in the Oval Office or he's doing a State of the Union and he's got all this gilt fleur-de-lis and everything's painted gold, and it's just he's building a ballroom. That's I don't remember now the budget of the ballroom, but it's not just that. It's that it's the ballroom is like bigger than the White House. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's
It's
just
like a
all a
whole, is it, I
cartoon.
think it's like a whole continuity of government type of place they're making. It's like a bunker. It's
Yes,
basically
it
another
is.
bunker.
It
It's
is.
another
It's
bunker.
another bunker. And he says, oh, we need this. We need this for safety. And it's like, well, how about just putting it underground and keeping the eyesore away from us?
And don't they have How much do they have underground already?
Oh
They
yeah,
have to
it's
have
yeah.
tons. So
Tons
it's.
underground. I mean, I was in Colorado Springs years ago, 40 years ago, 35 years ago, and the talk of the town there. I mean, that's a huge military outpost there. And
The Cheyenne
well,
complex too is out there, right? Based
Colorado,
over.
yeah.
Yeah.
But at any rate, yeah, Colorado seems to be an important. We could break down the word Colorado and think about that, but it's yeah, it's important. But you know, they were talking about it then, so they don't need another underground base. And it's just, to me, it's a crazy display of megalomania that we are actually supposed to be witnessing, and that the point of it is crazy display of megalomania.
And is it also, is it supposed to be like, this is what's distracting, this is what's entertaining now? Or I like, because to me it'd be easier just if in my head I'm like, if I try to put myself in their shoes, the social engineer's shoes, if you're trying to socially engineer a public, wouldn't it have just been easier to business as usual and then do all of this stuff that they're doing in the background without anyone knowing or anyone giving any
Of
pushback?
course, but so I think the point of it is, it's like a psychic trauma. It's like
Has to
wounding
be,
a
right?
psychic, that especially if you don't have a clue of what might be going on or going on. So if you're an average man and woman and your children and you're seeing this, it's traumatizing you, even if you're MAGA all the way. You're having a psychic wound applied to you. You're not aware of it.
Especially with every major event that keeps happening, like whether it's Charlie Kirk, whether it's the Trump assassination attempts, which ones are, who knows if any of them are real or not, but highly doubtful. But I mean, it's all mass trauma ritual, like a fraternal order sort of initiation, revelation of the method type of thing.
And I think as the Masons say, now is the time. It's just this is and okay, so back to just the crazy show that we're being given. I saw a photo of Trump the other day, and he was posed looking at a table where they had some models, the Arc de Triomphe that I guess is going to be part of the ballroom complex or something like, and there were three different sizes of them. One was about yo-high, so I think it might have been 9 inches tall by 6 inches wide, and there was a smaller one, just a few inches, and one really tiny. It looked like it was part of a matchbox car village, so, and I started laughing I started laughing because I thought, wouldn't that be hilarious? This is Spinal Tap. So Trump shows up at the ballroom and they give him, the 9-inch Arc de Triomphe.
Oh my God, it's like, that's also like Zoolander when he comes, when he goes, and he's like, how do you expect the kids to fit in the building? And he throws it off. He's like, you're building a center for ants or something like that. He's like, it's a model.
That's, I mean, so evidently his Trump's Arc de Triomphe is supposed to like out triumph the triumph by I don't know how much larger, how much taller. And I thought, wouldn't that be
Sorry, this
you?
call
That's
again.
okay.
I'm gonna have
That's
to
all right.
block this guy.
Oh, I'll cover you up with pictures of the Arc de Triomphe here. So, but yeah, I thought that would be the final hilarious thing. And then they show Trump the cocktail napkin on which he drew it.
My God, I think that's, I mean, and it is really at that level at this point, which is.
Yes, it's all become it really. I mean, Alan used to always say, "We're living through a script. We're living through a script." And sometimes, if he would be, in a bad mood, he'd say to listeners, "I'm bored. I'm bored of this script. I've been living through this script. I'm bored with it." But it's so true that. And a big thing he was, big on pointing out was the legalism of it all. Why do we have revelation of the method? Well, it seems to be some kind of legalism that we told you what we're doing, and
And that's like a question everyone seems to keep having as to why do they tell everyone what they're gonna, but it does seem to be a contractual thing, which is, and it seems like they even put that in the Christian story with with the crucifixion. That's it's all supposed to be like a legal.
So yeah, I think that's where we're at right now, which is there's so much going on, but we're being mocked. Everything is appears to be more or less out in the open now.
Well, it also seems like they have to need some of us for some part of this, or why would it even be necessary to do even the mocking? And I think it might be like maybe a hedge against how much of the technology they have can actually work without some sort of connection to consciousness. I don't know. Because
And what is the end game? What is the end game? Now, I want to be before we dive into that deep subject. Besides the fact that you have your own thing where you're producing, for people for hire, you also do podcasts that you have on a YouTube channel, Chris Miner. And I think it's just Chris Miner.
Chris Minor Official, I think,
Okay.
is the handle. It was my old solo music page that I had like three songs on, and then I just started putting up shows probably in the past year or so.
Okay. Well, there are a few questions. So before I forget them, I want to ask you, backing up now, where you're going to give me a song, the what that you did for The Watchful. So
Yeah, the what?
I can plug in a little bit of that video there, where
And
we talk about it.
the only thing is, do you? I don't know if the company that I distribute through, they might not copyright strike you, but they might just like,
Oh, not allow it. Okay,
no,
that's.
they'll allow it, but they might just, you can't, like, if you have ads, I don't know if you have ads up on your videos, it just
No, I
might.
don't. Yeah.
Oh, so then
Yeah.
it would be fine. Then they're not gonna, not
We'll
because
see. I may just do a picture of it or something, or okay,
I
but
allow people to use it, so people
okay.
use it all the time. It's just then I think if the company might put a, they might put an ad. That's what I don't, if you don't.
Okay. There's a couple of questions that because these will be little music plugins. So you're not actively writing songs, singing, performing. You're not doing that anymore. You're not in a band and you're not performing solo.
Yeah, not in anything that's consistently. I haven't played live in a long time,
Okay.
probably since my last show with the guys, which was a skate and surf festival in New Jersey,
Oh, okay.
down in
Skate and surf.
Asbury
All
Park.
right. Well, I had two questions, and I asked you one of them earlier, but here it is. Of all of the songs that you've ever written or performed, going back since you started doing it, and this could be an old one with a band, or it could be something new or something you did just for yourself, that I asked you to pick a song that best described like your state of mind today, or your views on the world today, or some statement that in other words, it can be a 10-year-old song that you did, but it best typifies the mood you're in right now. So,
Honestly, I would even say probably the watchful, probably still.
okay,
That
all
was one
right.
of the ones where it was I never usually would use like any sort of other sort of like scripture or anything like that to start even getting in a, but for that, for some reason, I just took a line that's sober-minded and the watchful. There's a line in one of, I can't even remember what verse of the Bible it's from at this point, but I just took that and then that developed into a whole song that's supposed to be a metaphor about a relationship with someone who's actually a witch and making it out to seem like you're the one who's doing all these horrible things to the town that you're in
Right.
and you get locked up and blamed for it all when really it was her. But it's also kind of like commentary on society at the same time and the wrong people kind of being blamed for things going on. So that's probably why I would pick that one. Just because a lot of the songs we did with the band were more, they were lighter. There's lighter in mood. The subject topics we did never got political. We were very much, there's a lot of like, be happy, mental have, or like, we're sad, like emo sort of stuff in one way or the other. So like, that's why when I started writing the few songs I've done on my own, I've always been kind of conscious of that. And that's part of the reason I started doing that was because I wanted to write things that were a little bit different, more folksy, a little deeper, a little, have a little more meaning than just having fun, which I love the fun songs too. But yeah, I would say the watchful.
Okay.
Thank you.
who's home.
Hi.
What'd you get at the store? Spending all our money.
Ha, ha, ha. I got a few things. This really creepy book.
Let me see. Take
out. You need a camera.
Oh my god, it's so scary. How much you spend on it? Jesus Christ.
Whatever.
All right, now in a way you've answered a little bit of my next question, which has to do with the talks, the conversations that you have and publish on YouTube. And so I'll share your channel with people, but you get into some interesting conversations with a wide range of people. I would say if there's a theme, which maybe there isn't because you talk to a lot of different people, but I would say that the theme would be occult and esoteric kinds of conversations that you have.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned this woman and her Patreon behind the paywall that, you know, having conversations about the elements. So,
yeah. And I mean, that one, geez, that gets into everything. And it's even more mainstream, even science that, like, just looking at it, trying to understand what the hell the mainstream view on the periodic table is, and then what were the alternative ones that were suggested, even the occult ones that were suggested by, like, Ledbetter and the Theosophical Society, which I know me and you had spoken about last time a little bit about them. But yeah, that it's rough when you get into the whole periodic table. It almost seems like it was invented intentionally to be difficult for the average person to get a grasp on.
Tell me about that a little bit. I have, quite frankly, I haven't given the periodic table a ton of thought, but
so, like, when I talk to someone like my friend Benjamin Balderson, who I know I mentioned to you last time, who he considers himself like an alchemist is what he'd call himself. But it's because he does stuff in a lab that he has at his farm, and he knows how things work. He can fix a car. He could fix pretty much almost about anything as far as I know. But if he needed to be fixed, he'll figure it out. And he'll tell you that you could look at a book for how an engine works, and that book really isn't going to help you until you start working with the engine, because they'll tell you to do something and it won't work and you'll have to just figure it out yourself. And I kind of feel like there's a simpler way that all of this could have been taught to us in school, and it just was not done, probably for very specific reasons. And when I talk to him and he breaks things down, I'm like, oh, it makes way more sense when I get the alchemical sort of breakdown, which is just a simpler breakdown of how things are either alkaline or acidic and why this would make this have a reaction or not have a reaction. It's just a different way, I think, of teaching that we didn't get exposed to.
Okay, so the AC's kicked on. That's why I keep going mute there, but because it's so noisy on the recording. But so what prompted you to start these interviews? When, you know, when was the first one? When did you say, oh, I think I'll record these and put them up on YouTube?
So I was doing shows with Emily Moyer for a little while, the one who I'm doing the periodic table stuff with. And then it was sometime when I was on a break from doing those, I had been wanting to start having more discussions with people, because I was going on other people's channels, like Silas has his channel, Silas Speaks. I would go on his Discord and record conversations with him every once in a while that he would post. I had a few friends who I would do this with, and I wanted to start doing some on my channel that I could have a little more control over and change the time so they would be a little more doable for me, because people in the UK are doing stuff way earlier than I usually like to do stuff. But yeah, it was pretty much just that. I got to a point where I had enough free time that I could start recording conversations and putting them up on my channel. And I wasn't too worried. I'm not worried about anything getting taken down or anything. It's not like I'm making any money or anything, so it's not that big a deal right now.
Did you have, I mean, like in your head, did you have a mission statement?
Well, it was because I've been since 2020, I've been needing an outlet and that like to just to talk to people who are of similar have a similar mindset about with everything that was going on. And that's part of the reason I think I started going on other people's podcasts. And then I was like, well, I can help. And I always knew I could help. I have a skill set that could help in making videos, editing, and eventually that's what I'd love to do that when I have more time and I'm not working as much. So that's kind of the
Is some
idea.
of what you were, talking about when you first got started, was it about, say, the craziness of COVID?
Oh yeah, that's like the main thing I think that we were talking about. That's how I actually met Silas, because of that online. Like we just started talking. Same with Emily. It was because of that. Because out here, it was really crazy for a long time.
So I have a question because this is something I don't want to get too existential crisis with it, but it there, from time to time I said I'm, evaluating, I'm always evaluating what am I doing and how am I spending my time. And this is when you lose someone that you love, your whole world has to be built up again and reevaluated, and how do you spend your time? And you also know that life is very precious, and it's just like that. And so, for me, I never want to be row, row, row your boat. That's it. I know I don't want to be comfortable. I don't want to be secure. I don't want to be taking it easy. I want to be pushing pedal to metal kind of thing. But do you have those kind of questions? I mean, you're a heck of a lot younger than I am, but do you have existential crisis kinds of questions where you go, what am I doing and why am I doing it?
Oh, of course. All the time. I think I just had one. I was having one yesterday where I was telling Maggie, I was like, I need to figure out what I'm doing with work and how I'm going to start, if I need to change what I'm doing to save up a little to get us into a different place. Like, it's just. She's like, don't worry about it. So luckily she balances me out a bit with that. But yeah, all the time. All the time. It's hard not to. I don't know. I don't really understand people who don't.
And like even, I mean, I guess you've been going through it in a way. I said, well, you're kind of young, but you probably had your first existential crisis when you left the band,
Oh
right?
yeah. It
Maybe
was
sooner.
huge. And then yeah, probably even sooner with just even transferring schools was a big deal because I transferred schools a lot. I went middle school, transferred from a Catholic school to a public school. Then I went back to a Catholic school. Then I transferred Catholic schools in high school. Then I transferred colleges twice. So like constantly kind of making things more difficult too for myself than they should have been. But just because I was not finding what I was looking for, I guess, wherever I was. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do and why certain things were bothering me so much about certain things. And it was easier, I guess, at that time, instead of, well, there was no way I was going to be able to confront some of the things that bothered me head on. It just wasn't going to be productive. So I just switched locations a lot of times and that helped. But ultimately, now that there's no one to confront except for myself. I mean, that's what you figure out after a while. And that's so now it's just constantly confronting myself. What are you trying to do? What is your goal here?
Well, when you were young, when you were in middle school and then high school and then university, what were you trying to accomplish? Why were you switching schools
See,
so many times?
I think a lot of that was make your parents happy and with what their expectations are of you. That was a lot of the reason I think all of that was happening, because I mean, I loved sports. I played sports all through high school, so I always strove to like do the best I could be. I played in college for a little bit, baseball before I quit, and I would have never quit before that, even if I wanted to, because that would have been very disappointing for my mom and dad. But same with if my grades dropped, my mom would have been very disappointed. And then it got to a point where, yeah, I don't really care what they want me to do. I want to do what I want to do. And then that's how the band sort of started out of that, because I realized it wasn't healthy.
Okay, so you quit the baseball in college. What did they think about that?
I think at that point, then they understood it a little bit more than they would have if I did it sooner. Because I gave it, at least I was trying, and I was just like, I also got a little, I got sick at the time with a weird stomach, the H. pylori bacteria thing, apparently. That's what they said I had. They got rid of it, but it made me take a step back because I was in a lot of pain when I had it. Even though I didn't have an ulcer or anything, it just was painful. And I was like, do I really want to keep killing myself, like playing this stupid game that is so political now? Again, it's like restarting everywhere you go, because no one, everyone already has their own team, their own lineup set up. You got to earn your spot. You got to, but it's not even earning your spot. You could be the best guy on the team. If the coach doesn't like you, you may not be playing as much as you should be. And I was just tired of like dealing with even the idea of that. So I was like, what do I want to do? And I was like, I want to do creative, something creative. And I think that's how the band sort of formed.
So now I may be taking a leap, a step too far, a leap too far here. But when you're describing this and you've got your brother that stayed close to home and he's a dentist and he's doing quite well, it made me think of the movie Eagle Eye, if you ever saw that, where the twin brothers.
Is that with Shia LaBeouf?
Yes.
I don't remember the twin thing though. I don't, wait, what, can you remind me what happens in it?
Okay, so the good twin, he makes good. He joins the military, and he's a star. He's makes straight A's all the way through uni, and the parents are very, very happy. And Shia LaBeouf is, he's gone and lived in Thailand, and he's traveled around, and he dropped out. He missed his scholarship to university, and then the good twin is killed, and Shia LaBeouf has to step up. And that's the
Okay.
setup there.
I think I
So
remember.
I'm not saying it was that extreme in your family, but was there an element of that?
I think a bit, but oddly, it gets very, like, it got very prodigal son eventually to where now my brother, like, isn't as close to my parents as he would be because of the just his work and other stuff. That's just stupid drama stuff where I'm closer now than I had been with my, especially with my mom, who was very like, you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. Once she accepted it, it only made the relationship better because I didn't feel that pressure, which he might still feel. I'm assuming he probably does.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm
Yeah.
curious. And there's just the two of you.
Yeah. Just us two. So,
And
just us two.
he's married and has children?
No children, but yeah, he just got married this past year, or 2025, so last year. Yeah. He has a house. He is in New Jersey. So his business is doing well, but stressed. I know he's stressed. It's stressful.
How are you stress-wise, and what, where do you feel? I mean, like you're saying to Maggie, well, I think we need a better place and a bit, da da da. What's
Well,
that
I
about?
mean,
What's pushing you to think you need that?
I think it's just more so the inconsistency of work right now. And I think a lot of that is the economy and just people not having money and me just wanting to make sure I can take care of her. Even not that she wants me to. She definitely doesn't want me to. She's not that type of person, but I am that type of person. Or I, especially because I want to get married. I want to do, I'm a little bit old traditional in that way. So I think it's just that, thinking about that and thinking I'm getting a little older now. It's, I want to start taking the relationship forward, but it all costs money to do, especially if you're doing it in a traditional way.
In LA.
In LA. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, but even I don't think it would be that much different at this point where we are in New Jersey. It's pretty expensive out there even. So, I mean, maybe if I came down to Texas or something, I don't know though. I know heard the
Well,
prices are going up.
I tell people in Texas, check your county before you move
Right?
here because the taxes, the
Everything.
property taxes are county by county.
Yeah.
And, some of the counties are affordable and mine isn't, so
Yeah.
my childhood friend, she and her husband, built a house, got a land. They have some cows and chickens and things like that and raised their girls there. And they built that place like 30 years ago. In a county that is adjacent to this one because of the property taxes. And so far, that bet has paid off. Their taxes have always been manageable. So,
Yeah, so I mean, it really is like luck of where you pick to live. And geez, I wouldn't even know where to go aside from back to New Jersey, which where we live, it's not much different.
well, what popped into my head is Nashville.
Nashville. Yeah, they actually, the taxes, I'm assuming, are better there, right?
Well, I don't know. I think the cost of living in Tennessee is better, and there's a lot to
An arts, there's a
recommend.
music
Yeah,
scene
and
there,
there's a
yeah.
music scene there, and probably in Knoxville too, but
Yeah. I'm wondering if that's, I know they cast a lot too now out of, like, they just produce a lot of films, I should say, out of the whole Atlanta region. Most of the stuff is getting made out on that side of the country now, which is ironic because we move out here and then they move out there.
yeah, it is. And
Yeah.
I don't know if you could handle the climate in Louisiana, but they've got a
Ooh.
pretty, yeah, I know it's
My
brutal. It's brutal.
cousin lives out there in Houma, and he's like, it seems really rough. I don't know if I can do anything there. Especially with the when they have the all the flooding and the storms. The way he describes his house getting even, I'm just like, Jesus Christ. I don't know if I can deal with that.
It's intense. So, where's Maggie's family from?
Chicago.
Okay.
Chicago. So even there, it's like, you're dealing with a similar situation here, depending where you're at.
Well, I mean, I think I see that. This is one thing that's in my head a lot. I don't know if you go there or if you consider this, but if you talk about jobs being harder to come by and the economy and the prices of things, I do think we are going into some kind of a long-term slump of some sort, and it's hard to know how to prepare for that, frankly.
Yeah, it is. And and that's the thing. It's like the only benefit of, I think, moving to some, like, say, in New Jersey or Chicago would be having a family there to kind of help when needed, which is she doesn't like taking help. Whereas I'm more as one, if like your family's there for you and they can help and you really need it, what else can you do at some point? You can't just. No one's gonna, I'm not allowing anyone to go homeless here. And you shouldn't allow yourself to do that if someone is willing to help in your family. At least just take the help and pay them back. You guys could, get through it any way you can, because it is, I think, everywhere people are, it's gonna get really rough, at least for a little while. And people are gonna have to get creative with how they
Yeah.
make their money.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just, hopefully people aren't going into debt. They aren't living beyond their means, and they're thinking about ways that they can, have a I mean, I just had a good neighborly sense, and I don't do this as much, but when I was talking about reevaluating my life and how I spend my time, I'm like, I just got to get outside more. And so I'm going to promise myself that I'm going to do an hour a day, just out pruning something or digging soil, something like
Yep.
that. And I've got these big rosemary bushes that I put in a few years ago, and they're about the most productive thing in my garden is this rosemary, and the harvests are just over the. So about 3 or 4 days ago, I made some rosemary salt. You take the rosemary fresh off the leaf, and then you put it in a blender food processor with some salt, and you've got rosemary salt. It's really good on salads and potatoes and stuff. And then I just cut lots and lots of rosemary, and I had armloads of the stuff, and I just walked around the neighborhood and passed it out, a little rosemary salt and a little fresh rosemary. I had about six or seven houses in the neighborhood, and it made me feel good. But what made me feel better was yesterday, my neighbor directly across the street came over while I was out pruning and doing things in the yard with a warm loaf of rosemary sourdough bread.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
But that's great because
yeah.
now you know you're making friends with the people who live around you, and if things get rough, you have the people who are around you, which
That's it.
that's hard to do, especially out here. It's hard to do. It's
It's
really hard to do.
very hard to do in LA. It's hard to do in any city, though. It really is.
Yeah.
It's you just in a city, you're just like, ugh.
And people don't want to be, a lot of people in cities don't like to be bothered with other people that they don't know. So it's very standoffish. But getting outside is definitely still that helps even in itself. That's something we've been both trying to do more of because it just starts. You could feel since 2020 at least, I've felt the way the toll it's taken on me just physically. Because I mean, I still work out 3, 4 times a week, but I was working out every day at a gym. I would go to be outside to get to the gym. It's just that whole process was cut off for 2.5 years. And it's just when you lose that, you feel your body, you feel it in your body, all the things that were a little bit stronger when you're trying to build up that strength again, how much harder it is now that you're a little older to get back to where you were. Because once you start losing a little bit, it's like incrementally harder to get back.
It is, and it's just, it's just satisfying. It's satisfying to be outside
Yeah.
and to, look at nature and
Yeah, it
breathe
just,
in the chemtrails.
I suppose to, I mean, honestly, I'll take the chemtrails over the screens sometimes because, I mean, it's killer on the eyes. Let me tell you, especially my eyes.
It is. Oh, boy, I'm noticing that too. So, I mean, I think that's the number one biggest thing that I've done to adjust, to have a little frame of mind adjustment is no, I just get up from the computer, walk away, walk away.
Yeah, and that's kind of what sucks about the job I do, being editing, and that's part of part of the stuff I discuss when I'm struggling over what I should be doing because I'm like, do I want to be sitting in front of the computer all the time? Even podcast editing, it's like anything I'm doing, I'm in front of a screen doesn't feel great. So, gotta try to find a way around that.
Well, I guess this is, I mean, I think life is just a constant. You're always adjusting and thinking what works and what doesn't work. Have you popped a question yet, or is it just in your head to that that's what you want to do?
I mean, I haven't yet, but it's because I'm trying to save up for the. She's right there. So when I plan on getting that soon, and then I'm gonna
Okay.
plan everything out.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Say no more.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. I think that'll be, it'll be a new, almost like a boost in momentum for us both too, just to actually take that step. Will be exciting.
That's good. That's
Yeah.
great. That's a good
Yeah.
deal. Well, I am I don't know what time it is, but yeah, okay, it's time for me to go get my hour
Hour
outdoor.
outside.
Yeah. I'm
Well,
gonna go
thank
prune
you for having
something.
me on. I had a good time.
Yeah,
I
well,
always
maybe
enjoy.
was there a burning thing that we wanted to talk about? We were kind of all over the map, but I wanted to just have an kind of a get to know you and share the basics.
I'm sure there will be many burning things we
Okay.
could discuss in the future
All right.
because well, now that we've done this episode, God, I'd love to get into current events, Alan's work, the occult, all the stuff that he used to get into. I'd love to have more discussions with you about that in the future.
Well, you know what would be fun to do, what I'd enjoy doing, and that's another one of my things that I'm trying to do besides time outside, is kind of back to basics. And for me, basics is Alan, and you know, really get into the work more. I said to him when I'd been in Canada for about a year or so, I said, you know, I really miss listening to your talks all the time, because I listen to him all day long, hours every day. And he I think he said something, or maybe like gave me a look, like, you know, like really seriously.
You hear me live. I'm right here.
But I do always learn so much when I listen to his talks and dissect them or read something. I just, you know, the depth and breadth of his knowledge, and all the things that he didn't say, but the breadcrumbs are there, so you know, ooh, what did he mean there?
Yeah. And it's all still so, it's always the, even the Redux is like you guys do. I don't know if it's you and whoever else puts them together. Is it just
Me,
you? Yeah,
yeah.
when you put them together, they are very relevant as to what's going on right now. And I know a lot of them are years and years old. So he knew what was coming.
He did.
He,
He
yeah.
certainly did. Well, Chris, thank you very much. I enjoyed this,
Well, thank
and
you.
I'll look forward to sharing this with people.
All right.
And so it's Chris Miner Official. I'll link to your YouTube as well as your website, where you've got the work that you do professionally.
Yeah, you could just put my link tree. It'll be if you want. It's just
Okay,
easier.
I'll do that.
And I'll put once. Let me know whenever you post it. And I'll share this around. And I've been sharing the Alan Watts CC TM page with everyone for a long time now. So I'll be sure to do that though
Okay.
when this is posted as well. So thank
All right.
you
All
again for
right.
having me.
Okay. Good deal.
And
I
we'll talk.
will.
Let's talk again soon.
All right. All right, Chris. Take care.
You too.
You and your camera.
Oh my God, it's so scary. How'd you
Huh?
spend that? Jesus Christ.
Whatever.
I hate you.